At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello all, welcome to Up the Poshcast, the podcast made by the fans for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Up the Poshcast. Peterborough United beat Newport County 4-2 yesterday in a very entertaining FA Cup clash. It was looking very dodgy for the first 7 minutes, but ruthless attacking play from the Posh sealed the second round. I'm joined today by Ashley, Lods, Max, Dell, and of course, I am Charlie. Let's kick things off with you, Ash. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, I think like you mentioned, 7 minutes of probably disastrous football and then ultimately 83 minutes plus of just pure Peterborough United dominance. It's a bit of a strange one, really. It felt like we gave them a two-goal head start. And then from then, it just I didn't ever feel like we were not going to come away with a win from that victory and that performance. It was solid all over the pitch, I thought. Lots of players growing into their positions and sort of developing themselves as well against a lower league opposition. But overall, it was a delight to see and to obviously get through to the next round, which is important for clubs our size.
Yeah, I can't help but agree with Ashley there. I'm very, very pleased that yesterday's game happened because I think we learned a lot. The first 7 minutes, and to be honest, I'll probably say the first 15 minutes, Newport pressed really well from the front, and we always struggle to play against teams like that, and we struggled against Newport. And they ran out of steam. Darren Ferguson said it at the in the post-match. They ran out of steam, and we just pinned them from then onwards. Like Ashley said, I don't think I was expecting us to lose the game, even at 2-0 down. And by the sounds of it, I don't think Darren Ferguson was either. I think he knew he had the quality. But what he did learn was is that if Newport can even do that to us, then any team can. So rather than change our play style, which is something I've been calling for recently, it looks like we've settled for we will play that way regardless, and we will rely on our front four to outscore teams, which is the traditional Peterborough way. And if we have games like we did yesterday, I'm very happy with that because it was a very entertaining game. He said we had value for money. We absolutely did. And I think every Posh fan is a Posh fan because we have entertaining games like that. So I do hope that we continue to play the way we did yesterday.
Yeah, it's always exciting, especially when you go somewhere and score four goals. And that's the key takeaway. Yes, it was a freak 10-15 minutes at the start that put us on the back foot. But I actually think that we came back and we've seen a pattern really over the last couple of weeks. And those patterns that we've seen is sort of when we concede first, our heads seem to drop and we never get back into a game. And that pattern was put to bed last night, we were put to bed in the tie because we were able to score four goals from going 2-0 down. And I think a special plaudit should be to Fergie, who got every substitution right. I felt every substitution came on and did their job, which is key for us in getting that win and obviously into the hat.
For me, whoever the opposition is, FA Cup first round day is probably one of my most favourite fixtures of the season. Because you never know who you're going to get. Obviously, we drew Newport, but it's just that excitement of who you're going to get. Home, away, you hope it's an away, you hope it's like a smaller team or whatever. And yeah, it just proves why. Yesterday, going 2-0 down, why it's always about the giant kill or whatever. But it is what it is. It was a good game. Yeah, disappointing to be 2-0 down, but I think we upped our game to towards the end of the first half. And then the second half, there was no way we wasn't going to be winning that game. Great goal by Randall, to be fair. I'm not sure I got it in from that angle. And then also, a couple of cracking goals from Ricky J. Jones. In particular, the second one from near enough the corner flag, running across the line and beating a keeper at the near post. I think as a keeper, Newport keeper, you would have been a little bit disappointed to have three goals, beat you at your near post. But overall, an enjoyable day, a long day, because Newport ain't round the corner. It is nice. I'm not sure I like the fans too much, but just a little quick point out, the stewards are superb. They looked after me, and kudos to them. But Newport got a win, 4-2. Everyone's happy with that.
Yeah, I think 4-2 is a very good scoreline. It's a very entertaining one, certainly. And it was very nice to see sort of a defiant Posh come out in that second half after some crazy first half controversy and take the win. And it shushed some of our fans as well, because some of the absolute dross I was reading on social media after 7 minutes of that game was, I've already used the word dross to describe it, but it was completely pathetic. People calling for the manager's head, the manager who, has been the best and most successful manager in the club's history, the manager who, as recently as last season, led us to both silverware and a finish in the top four in League One, a manager who has got us sat very much mid-table right now, but with ambitions to go higher, and certainly not got us looking like scared over our shoulder for relegation. Calls to get for Fergie's head were always inevitable, because some people in this fan base just cannot be content with what they have. Some people in this fan base have their own agendas, pick sides on certain topics and can't see beyond that. And I think Fergie's a case of that. He's not always going to be popular, because I think he's a manager that will always see it how it is. You know, he said it how it is about the Joel Randall situation. He said it how it is after Wickham. And Mansfield last season was another great example of that. And some people can't handle that. But if you want to become a football team that wins games and gets promotion, that's what we need. He clearly put, a rocket up the right place at halftime in that Newport game, because the team came out in the second half completely reinvigorated, with a complete passion and with a complete desire and determination to win that game. Very well managed, very well coached after, a first rocky 7 minutes that I don't think he or anyone could do anything about. It was just individual lapses of concentration and a very intense Newport press. And then we saw the game out from there and we outscored Newport. So very well done to Fergie and his coaching staff. A very well coached afternoon, and anyone calling for his head can just get in the bin.
Yeah, I think you're right, Charlie. I think that a couple of things that you didn't mention, the confidence and the belief in the way that we do things. It doesn't always seem like it's the right thing, certainly when we're losing. But for the fans that were there yesterday, obviously I've mentioned a few things on Twitter. It's all very well and good making these comments when you're sat watching other teams play football. But unfortunately, I get that not everybody can be at every single game, but I think that Fergie definitely appreciated how much the away fans that were in the ground stuck with the team and didn't get on their backs at 2-0 down after 7 minutes. It could have been very easy to get very toxic. But I didn't hear, certainly from where I was sat in the first half, I didn't hear any sort of abuse being held towards players. I know that in the second half, there was definitely some abuse towards their BTEC Christy Pym style goalkeeper that they had in net, and some of their dodgy defenders and their circus freaks up top. But if they're going to try and cheat their way to the second round of the FA Cup, then so be it. When we think about sort of the individual performances, I think that it was nice that we could rest some players. It was nice that we could see some players come into the team that we haven't seen for a while. But I'll let somebody else kick us off with a player.
Yeah, to be honest, I was quite intrigued to see what sort of lineup he'd put out, and I was quite glad to see he'd gone full strength, because I do think they need to get some more time playing together. But the one big change that he made that I don't think many people would have predicted was putting Odo in, and he was very complimentary about Odo in training, saying he works his socks off, sort of player that Posh fans love, sort of player that Fergie loves. I think he's not been getting into the first team just purely because of how good the front four are. But he was great yesterday. We're in this tricky position. I don't recall a time we've been in this position much where we have five players in four positions. Where who do you drop if you're going to put Odo in? I don't think Mothersill was at his best yesterday. But he is similar to Poku in the sense that he's a bit of a moments player. He's the sort of player you want on the pitch just in case something happens. You can't drop Ricky in the form he's in. You can't drop Poku. Randall doesn't really have a sensible backup option unless you play a left winger on the right-hand side and put Poku in the middle. Although Chris Conclark is coming back now as well. I'm quite interested to see if he manages to squeeze Odo in against Cambridge. Whether he deserves it or not, I don't know. It is just one game. It is against Newport, but I did think he was very good.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been wanting to talk about Odo for weeks. I've been, you know, I think I put a couple of tweets out about him because it feels like he's been quite hard done by this season in a way. You know, he played really well when he came in for Shrewsbury and was good at Exeter. And then it felt like he only really had one bad game, and that was against, was it Lincoln, that he was poor in the first half and got taken off. And he hasn't had really a sniff since. And I know the front four's had some good games, good individual performances, but I wouldn't say they're a settled front four yet by any stretch of the imagination. And if Odo is working really hard in training, like Lod's suggested Fergie has said, and if he is coming in and putting performances in where he's contributing to two goals like he did at the weekend, I don't see why he can't work his way back into the starting 11. You know, Shrewsbury and Exeter away were two of our most assured performances of the season, two of the performances of the season that were the most professionally handled, and he started them both. So I don't see why Abraham Odo can't come back in. He looked like a very accomplished part of the team. He linked well with Sparks, from what I've heard, and was generally a bit of just a nuisance with it, with his tenacity on the left-hand side. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see Odo come back into the team. I think it's been suggested by Dara and Fergie that he will have a run of games at some point this season and that he will be back. Maybe he hadn't quite got his tactical awareness ready yet, and that's why he's been staying out of the team. But he now looks ready to go. And yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me to see Odo start against Cambridge. However, as I'm sure we're about to touch on, there are loads of attacking options in Fergie's hands, which can only be a good thing.
Just a little bit on Odo, from my point of view, I remember saying pre-season that I thought he'd be the one to watch with all the flair and whatnot. I think it's fair to say it's been a little bit disappointing, but he's actually been given the results, if that makes sense. He scored a few goals, he's had a few assists. Then he sort of got dropped because we changed the system and he sort of disappeared for a little bit. And then obviously he come back yesterday and had done very well. But I don't think he's ready to be put in a team yet. I think he still needs to be doing the subs. Probably start next week, but we'll come to that later. I'm not sure that he's ready to be in the team, push anybody out. I don't think he's actually given us enough of that. But I'm looking forward to what he can do for the rest of the season because I do think he's going to be an entertaining, good player for us.
Yeah, I probably disagree with you there, Del, on Odo and not being able to start. I think he is ready. I think he proved that he was ready over the first few starts that he had. Yes, he wasn't, you know, as amazing as we potentially had thought. But I actually thought that he had done enough to claim that starting place. But Malik has also been very good. And there's definitely competition on that side of the pitch between the two. So it'd be interesting to see come later on in the season who is that number one winger. But another player that has obviously been doing extremely well for us recently, we've mentioned him already a few times here, is Ricky J. Jones. And Ricky J. Jones was the first 10 that I've given this season. I'm sure there'll be many more 10s to come, but was the first 10 that I gave. And I think with the 10 that I gave him, I think it was more the fact that when you think of a substitute's performance, I don't think I can think of one better this season. He's come on and done exactly what we needed him to do. He's stretched the back line. He's ran at tired legs. And he's scored two goals that ultimately avoided a penalty shootout, avoided extra time, and put us into the hat for the second round. And that's exactly what you want from a substitute coming off the bench, is to how are you going to impact this game? How are you going to change this game? And I think he did that perfectly. So to not give him a 10, I would have felt would be a disservice, because coming onto the pitch, that's exactly what you want him to do. And with the form he's in, I do agree probably dropping him for the FA Cup game was fair. I think he needed a rest. The arrest was short-lived when we found ourselves 2-0 down and needed someone off the bench to give us the biggest impact. And I think we picked the correct player to do that. And again, with the form that he's in, the goal-scoring form, I don't see why, you know, he should be dropped for the rest of the season. I think he should continue to play where he is.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it was nice to sort of see that natural finishing that Ricky definitely has lacked in time gone by. And it felt like those were two proper strikers' finishes that he had yesterday, that sort of he's managed to work his way around the goalkeeper for the first one. And then he has managed to obviously just blister himself along the goal line and make a tidy finish, which is nice to see. And he, like I've said before, did plenty of defending of him last season because he had all those raw attributes. The finishing was the one thing that was missing. And I do genuinely believe now that he is the real deal and he's got that finishing under lock. Like, it won't always look the most natural. It won't always look like he's meant to have done it, but I'm relatively sure that he is going to get us sort of 10 to 15 goals across this season. He's already at 7 now. When we talk about impact subs, what a fantastic sub to have. The only person that I can sort of think of that would be able to do that would probably be somebody like a prime David Ajiboy, with his pace, his directness, and that sort of thing. It's sort of thinking back to like the Nathaniel Mendes, Lang, Sean Batt style substitution appearances that we would have, where we are literally just getting at players, especially in the lower divisions, where they just don't have the legs for 90 minutes against the attacking pace that we have. So it was nice to see. Don't get me wrong, yeah, absolutely fantastic to get it done in 90 minutes, like Max says, because I did not want to be getting back any later than we did last night after another 30 minutes of football and then a potential penalty shootout.
Yeah, we've often criticised Ricky for his inability to finish. And if there's any Premier League teams that are watching yesterday's game, I think you look at Ricky, you look at the age, you look at his physical attributes, as in his pace, you look at how well he can press. And then if you look at those two finishes, you would just assume that you've got a complete striker there. It might not be consistent, but if he can do that every game, he should be in the Premier League. There's no doubt about it, because I don't think the physical attributes he has is matched by many other strikers in this country. And I've said it before, if you bring Ricky on in a Premier League game in 10 minutes, just to press from the front, he will have an impact. Even if he doesn't have the technical ability to do much with the ball, he will scare the living daylights out of defenders and goalkeepers and immediately win back the ball for a team like Man City or someone like that, that have all the technical players around him. I think he would be an asset. I could see him going in January. It'll be a shame for us, but I do hope he gets a big move, because he's clearly worked on his finishing and I think he deserves it. One other player I wanted to bring up nice and early is Joel Randle. We speak about Joel Randle almost every week and I never get a word in edgeways, because there's often people that are very anti-Joel Randle and there's often people that defend Joel Randle. And I've been on the fence for a lot of it. I think the issue that I've had with Randle in the past is where he goes missing in games. But I do think that he is the best at what he does, which is to quickly get rid of the ball in a positive way in that final third. And I think he was very, very present yesterday. I think he was one of the best players we had on the pitch. I think he was getting stuck in. He was involved. He was getting into spaces. He was ready to receive the ball. He was ready to give the ball. And I think his finish was great as well. If there's one gripe I have from his performance yesterday, it's him scoring the equaliser and just leaving the ball in the back of the net. The players were even shouting at him, telling him to grab the ball. And he just wanted to do some sort of celebration, which wasn't the time. It's Newport away. Just grab the ball, restart. But yeah, overall, I thought he had a very good game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It was one of his stronger performances. But I unfortunately will not be giving him many high scores. I do think that the important thing is that he does need to just remember that we were playing against a League Two team. They weren't the best. They didn't want to sort of get us after the first 15 minutes, did they? But overall, it was a good team performance. I think that he still has some work to do to sort of build that trust back with a large portion of the fan base. But it was nice to see him enjoying himself and celebrating in front of the Posh fans again.
Yeah. It was, and that's two of the attacking players spoken about. So I think we'll move on to talking about one very specific moment in the game that is gaining a lot of traction online. It would be remiss of us not to talk about it because it was such a surreal moment in the game yesterday. I was listening to the commentary. We were obviously. Some of you were up the other end. None of us really had a good view of it at the time. Dell, give me your thoughts on the ghost goal, the goal that never was for Peterborough United on Saturday. What is your view on the whole situation?
Well, I didn't quite understand what was going on. The first I saw was, what's his name? Number four, Archie Collins, like put his arm up, celebrating. And then you got Sparks just like stood there. It just seemed a bit of a muted celebration. And I wasn't quite understanding what was going on. I thought it was a penalty. I didn't actually know that the ball didn't go in the back of the net. I just thought we was like sort of trying to get for somebody. And then I saw some of the clips in hindsight and it's like, that's fucking disgusting. You know, how can a referee and a linesman miss that? It's quite clear cut. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I thought that all FA Cup games, the ball was like microchipped, same as in the goal line technology. Have I got that wrong? I'm sure I heard somewhere. But anyway, fucking something else I'm making up then, as well as players' names. So, I thought it was a bit bizarre. I think we could have celebrated a little. We're not celebrated. Why don't we just get the ball, run in the back of the net, pick the ball up and put it on the centre spot, you know? Because that's what we normally do, but we just sort of, I don't know. It was such a surreal feeling. Weird situation, but why did the Newport player pick the fucking goal up, lift the post up? I don't understand that. That's just cheating.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? It's like there is no respect in football between players, is there? And I do sort of have sympathy for referees nowadays. You know, that this conversation came up after the, I think it was the Declan Rice incident for Arsenal earlier in the season, which was, how are you supposed to referee a game of football where two sets of players are constantly trying to stitch each other up, whether that be from diving or claiming that they've kicked the ball away or just trying to get other players penalised for stuff? And the behaviour of the Newport County players after that second goal on Saturday was one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen on a football pitch. Running and picking up the goalpost, the side netting, it was embarrassing. It's made even more embarrassing by the fact that it then went on to not matter and they then conceded three more goals after it. But it was some of the most pathetic behaviour I've seen from a football team. At some point, you've got to have a bit of honour in the sport. It's one of the few sports that there is absolutely no honour in. You know, when you look at other games, you know, stuff that is as clear cut as did the ball go in the goal or not, teams will usually concede on that one. Newport were very unwilling to do so. It was pure cheating. It wasn't a subjective decision for the official. It was an objective decision. Did the ball go in the goal or not? They got it wrong. And they weren't, which was in its own a huge issue. But they weren't aided by a bunch of Newport County players that acted like toddlers, that acted like cheats, and that acted like a team that are going to go nowhere other than down and stick in League Two for the rest of time. Because there is absolutely no way that there is a good mentality among those group of players if they have to scrounge themselves around like that to try and avoid an equaliser when the ball literally went in the goal.
Yeah, am I right in saying that this was a Championship standard referee? He's been doing Championship games this season. I think that tells you all that you need to know. Absolutely no backbone from the referee. Clearly more worried about what he can upload to his Instagram after the game than actually putting in a performance worthy of good ratings from all of us. When I think about a game yesterday or today, I can't really, it was Sutton versus Birmingham, wasn't it? another one where there should have been a Birmingham penalty. The lad's gone down in the box and they've not given it. I think it just shows completely where the standard of refereeing is in this country at the moment and within the Football League and the FA. I don't know what the solution is. I don't want to just completely bash every single performance because it just sometimes sounds like sour grapes. But ultimately, when you win 4-2, you can afford yourself the luxury of making comment on the referee. And him and his assistant down the far end were absolutely shambolic. It was no backbone, no arsehole. And ultimately, they got very lucky. And then the flip side of that is that I think that they gave us some very, very, very fortunate decisions in the second half. I think that there were the disallowed goal felt soft. Then there were some free kicks and fouls that were given in the second half that felt like they were weak, and certainly some bookings. Taking it back to sort of how solid we were for the last 83 minutes of the match, I just wanted to make a shout out for George Nevitt. Obviously, coming in and out of the side is not always the easiest. But again, it was another fantastic George Nevitt performance where he ultimately wasn't what he's lacking physically wasn't exactly an issue, but he showed his ball playing ability. And like we mentioned before, for the Randall goal, he managed to step himself up onto the 18-yard box and was making passes and was doing those things that Ronnie was doing for us last season. So hopefully he can continue that rich vein of form that he's in when he gets his chance within the team.
Yeah, and one more player that I want to mention that I thought was probably unlucky to get onto the pitch yesterday was Chris Conn-Clarke. Obviously, we've known that he's coming around the November period, and for him to be named on the bench was really good. And I thought maybe we'd see a little cameo towards the end. Maybe if we went into extra time and we didn't score the last two goals, we'd get that cameo. But even when those two goals scored, I thought you could give him at least 10, a few minutes at the end, even just to run about and get used to the pitch again. But we've got Palace and the Bristol Street Motors Trophy coming up, and I think that'll be a perfect time for Chris Conn-Clarke to get a full game in, or maybe even 75 minutes, which will be good. And I think there's going to be a debate now between Randall and Chris Conn-Clarke, because I think we saw signs of positive play from Chris Conn-Clarke before his injury. And I think that is a big... there is going to be a point in where we're going to be looking at Randall and Chris Conn-Clarke and thinking who's going to be our starter. And Randall's very good at linking up the play, but I really like Chris Conn-Clarke's attribute of him just being able to produce a moment, or to, you know, he's got the sort of arrogance to pick the ball up and sort of shoot where he wants to, which I think is a big thing for us. And to get him back to full fitness, maybe, you know, or close to it in time for the game on Saturday, is going to be big, because then at least we've got we can swap to a different plan by switching Randall and Chris Conn-Clarke. So I think it was unfortunate to not get on the pitch, but if that means you can get 90 or 75 or 80 on Tuesday night, I think probably that's a little bit better. I think less risk of an injury, especially because Newport's back line were a little bit physical.
Yeah, I guess that's a nice way to sort of transition on from the Newport game into talking about the game on Tuesday night. We've got Crystal Palace under 21s in the BSM Trophy, a trophy that we won last season. And while we're not officially qualified out of our group yet, if we were to get battered by Palace and then Stevenage were to beat Gillingham, we would go out. But it's looking more likely than not that we'll go through. Lods, what kind of team would you be looking to put out if you were Fergie on Tuesday night?
I was actually under the assumption that we were already through. So if that's not the case, then that might change a little bit. There's a lot of players we've got that are injured that aren't quite ready to play yet. Rio being one of them. I think Bradley's still going to be out. Katonga's obviously still out. Sasuho's out. Chris Conn-Clarke's obviously back. I'd like him to start. It was a shame he didn't get any minutes against Newport whatsoever. I was expecting him to make a little cameo off the bench. Whether he's fit enough to start, I don't know. But I'd rather him start the game and see how he feels at half time than come on on from the bench. It'd be good for Blackmore to get a game. I don't think he's played a first team game for over a season now. Did he play? He must have played a couple of BSM games last season in the early rounds. Who else have we got? Harley Mills has been called back, hasn't he? It might be nice to see him get a game. But apart from that, I mean, I'd probably rest Archie Collins, but the rest of the players are all players that are in and around the first team anyway, due to our injury problems. So Kean Hayes is probably one that I'd want to see. And then Ado to see if he can carry on that momentum and maybe grab one of those places against Cambridge.
I'm normally one for keeping consistency going. Like I said, I wanted to pick a strong team for Newport. But to be fair, with Palace, I'd be happy just to see a complete overhaul. You know, maybe Will Blackmore in goal. He's got to have a go at some stage. You know, is it Tyler Young, the midfielder? Ollie Rose, centre-back. Trying to think of other players. Arlie. Mills, whatever, just those sort of players which should come in, and the players that are sort of like starting on the bench at the moment also have a start. I think we should have some stronger players on the bench if we need them to come on, but let's have some of our you know, the youngsters or the ones that ain't getting a run out to have a go. What we got to lose? I believe we're already qualified. I know there's sort of some up in the air. Have we qualified? Have we haven't? I've heard we have, but do you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go out there and let's let them have a go. So, yeah, that's what I would do. I'd play some of the youngsters, give them a go.
Yeah, and I think it's probably really important as well, just on that I'd actually leave a lot of our starting 11 at the moment at home. I just think it's not worth it to risk any injuries at this point. We've been injury ridden all season. It's exactly what everybody here said. I'd actually leave a lot of them at home, Ricky J. Jones being one of them. I think our aim was to give him a rest against Newport. We had to bring him on. I think he should just be left at home. Same with Poku. I think Poku should be left at home. I think we've got plenty of players on the bench that can play against Crystal Palace's under-21s. And I think we can leave players at home that we just don't need to risk the injuries for. Yeah.
No, I agree with Max, and I do think that probably was the one thing that Fergie would have been slightly disappointed in, is that he could only make the two changes yesterday, and they both had to sort of be the first team, the players that were in and around the first team. I think they would have loved to have got some of the younger lads, some of the ones that have come back from injury, and just given them a little bit of game time, giving them a run out, rather than take them all the way there than leaving them at home. So, you know, I think that, like we say, I'm not sure that full 11 changes is probably right. I think that we will see Manny and George Nevitt at the back for sure. But then I think that there's then going to be some rotation for the rest of the pitch. I think that there'll probably be four or five that started on Saturday that keep going. But who knows? We went to Colchester last year, didn't we? And it was a relatively overhauled team. I do think Dell's right. I think that we'll see Will Blackmore on Tuesday night. As for that, It could be anybody's guess. It could be Fergie up in the family stand watching it with the analyst and Scarfy down on the touchline.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. I think we're all on the same page in terms of getting a rotated squad going, getting some minutes into players that maybe haven't had as many minutes as they would want or that they need for the upkeep of their fitness. We'll talk quickly, I guess, about the cup draw that happened just before we recorded this evening. Notts County at home, which is actually a really, really tough game. It's got banana skin written all over it. They're a side that will more likely than not get promoted from League Two this season. They've got a very strong squad together. They seem to be picking up results at a really good pace in League Two. Lod, are you concerned that about the Notts County draw? I know Fergie will be happy that we've got a draw at home. How are you feeling about it?
I wouldn't say I'm concerned. I do think Notts County will give us a good game. I didn't go to the pre-season friendlies, but from the feedback that we got from that, they were both very competitive. They've got Jody Jones, who I think is just far too good for League Two. He should be in League One. I think it's only because of that big injury he got that he's down that far down in the leagues. they're doing well at the moment in League Two. It will be a good test for us, but I think the importance of us getting to the third round in terms of our expectations, in terms of the manager's expectations set by the chairman, I think this is a game that we just have to win, and we'll just do what needs to be done to win. It should be a good game. I think both teams will play a similar brand of football. I think there'll be both opportunities for both teams. But yeah, concerned, I think we should have enough to beat them.
I'm a little bit apprehensive, if I'm honest, with Notts County. They're a very good team. You know, they're sitting, is it third in League Two at the moment? Second, third, I'm not too sure. But, you know, they are a good team. And I think we've got one of probably the hardest draws, if that makes sense. I know we're at home, but they wouldn't have been on my ideal pick, put it that way. It's going to be tough to get through them, even though we are at home. It's going to be tough to get through them to get to the third round. But, you know, the fact that we've not been performing too well, and they're right up there, it could go any way. So a little bit disappointed with getting Notts County. Probably would have been better if we had them in away, to be fair. At least it's a good away day. But hey, it is what it is. Let's see what happens and see if we can get through them to go to the third round.
Yeah, for me personally, I think it's a fucking shit draw. I know that everybody in the club's banged on about home ties, but I don't want a home tie. I want to go away somewhere. I want to go to a non-league ground. I want to go to somewhere like Kettering, who have had a fantastic performance against Northampton. And I want to go to them and see how they can do against us. It's got posh losing written all over it. Wasting another game going to the second round and they're not really getting anything from it. Hopefully we make it on the TV so that, you know, there's a little bit more interest in it, but there were plenty of better ties out there. And in true posh fashion, as is always the case, we draw these teams and we've played them in pre-season. So this will now be the third time in the space of 3 months that we've played Notts County. I just want something different. I don't like playing the same teams at the same grounds over and over again. That's what the league's for. The cup game should be all about going somewhere new, going somewhere different and enjoying the experience that comes with them. That is what makes the FA Cup special. Is the big teams, and Peterborough United are not a big team, but there were plenty of smaller teams in the competition still that we could have gone to. So for me, like we said, banana skin, shit draw for me.
I don't think it's a bad draw. I think that's probably slightly harsh. As much as I would have liked to go to, you know, Market Harbour or something, that you know, doesn't bother me massively that we're going to be at home. It's easy. You know, it's a home game. You get to watch some football. You don't have to take yourself down to Wales like we did have to do at the last weekend. Notts County is a game that will have interest peaked on it. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't get put on TV because it's two teams that play very attractive football that like to score goals. I think it will be a case of outscoring. It wouldn't surprise me to see, you know, over 4.5 goals in that game on many of the accumulator. So I think it's not a bad draw. I think, as Ash has said, we will want to get a good trip out of the FA Cup. That's what it's about. But we're much more likely to get a great draw in the third round than we are in the second round. I want to get to that third round where the Championship and Premier League clubs come in. I want to have a chance to go to, you know, Old Trafford or something like that as a Peterborough fan. So, yeah, I'm not furious with the draw. I think it is a decent draw, and I think we should be backing ourselves to win it. So we'll move on to score predictions then. We'll wrap up and move on to the score predictions for the Palace game on Tuesday night. I'll start with you, Ash. What is your prediction for the BSM game?
Palace are quite a big, strong, physical under-21 team from what I've seen. I watched their game against Stevenage, which was the sort of the second or third week of the season, and they tested them. They've obviously got one of our ex-academy products in Adler Nascimento. So I'm going to go that there's going to be lots of goals. I think that it will be similar sort of to that Chelsea game that we played a few seasons ago where obviously Malik Mothersill tore the defence a new one. So I'm going to go with a 3-3. We will see some new goal scorers on the score sheet for Posh.
Crystal Palace are quite well known for having a good academy, aren't they? I don't know anything about their under 21s, but I can assume they'll have some talented players on show. And if we're playing a weaker side, yeah, I think you're right. I think it'd be a lot of goals involved. I'll go for 2-2. I know nothing about the Palace players. And without knowing what sort of players we're putting out, I can't really make an educated guess. So 2-2 seems sensible.
I'm going to go 4-0 win. And I'm going to go George Nevitt scores.
I'm going to stick to a draw because I don't want to put us down as getting beat, but I'm going to go 2-2. And Ollie Rose, I think, might get his first goal. Sounds good to me. 2-2, Ollie Rose, first goal. First goal, even.
Yeah, I rate that. I know he scored in pre-season against Notts County, and if he can get his big mullet on something, then we may be in business. I'll go for a win, though. I think we will beat Palace. I think I'll go 3-1 and I'll go a Chris Conclarke hat trick. I think he's going to start and I think he's going to have an absolute blinder of a game. It just screams him running the shop. So that's it. That's our episode looking back at Newport and previewing Crystal Palace. Obviously, we're going to have a bit of a funky schedule this week because we felt like Saturday's clash with Cambridge needed an episode of its own. So we will have a Derby Day special coming out in preview of that game in midweek after the Palace game. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's any other business to attend to. So thank you very much for listening to this episode of Up the Poshcast. We will see you on the next one. Looking forward to Cambridge.
Up the Posh.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Well, it's kind of symmetrical when we go like that.